After I dropped Kathy off at her house, I headed for Terry Jones's place. I was supposed to pick up Mark there, but when I got to the house, nobody was home. Terry's parents were out of town for the weekend, which normally meant it was party and poker time at the Joneses. I figured everybody had gone out scouting for booze and broads, so I sat down on the front steps to wait. It was a cool night, but not too cool. It was getting to be spring. It had been a real weird winter. Last fall, Mark and me had thought just alike, as one person. Now we couldn't even talk. Charlie had been alive and griping about our coke bill. I had been a hustler, both with pool and chicks. Eminem had been reading Newsweek and getting his kicks babysitting. Now everything was different. While I was sitting there, smoking and thinking, a car pulled up. I thought it was some guys coming to the party and so forth, so I didn't pay any attention. The four guys were standing right in front of me before I came to and realized that two of them were Tim and Curly Shepherd. "I thought you guys were in the cooler," I said pleasantly, just like I didn't know they were here for the sole purpose of stomping out my guts.
"We're out now," Tim said.
He scared me. He was what I'd call a rough guy. Curly was mostly mouth, but Tim backed up anything he said. He really was a hood. I know most people call any kid from over here on the east side a hood, but Tim really was.
"I guess so," I said, still smoking, not blowing my cool. If I kept them talking long enough, maybe Mark and Terry and God knows who else would show up.
"Seen Angela lately?"
Tim said.
Curly was keeping his mouth shut. Even he was awed by his big brother.
There was something about Tim Shepherd. His scarred face, his fighter's slouch, the flickering of his black eyes, that really let you know he meant business.
"Yeah, as a matter of fact, I saw her over on the ribbon last night, and she went for a drive with me."
I decided I didn't need to drag Mark into this. It was plain they weren't worried about him.
"No kidding?
Did you know Angela got her hair cut this morning? At least that's what people say. She told me something different."
I was sweating. I could feel it running down my back and wetting my palms, and my cigarette was shaking, so I ground it out on the porch. But I sounded calm as I said,
"What's she telling you?"
"She says you got her drunk and cut her hair off.
That the truth?"
"Yeah, that's the truth. And I'm sorry it happened." I decided to tell it straight for once, without all this hedging and playing the game. "It was a rotten thing to do, and I'm sorry."
"You ain't half as sorry as you're gonna be," Tim said,
and the two guys I didn't know rushed me, pinned my arms, and held me while Tim and Curly took turns punching me. I passed out finally, but not as soon as I'd hoped I would. When I came to, Mark was wiping my face off with a wet rag.
"Brian, you okay? Don't move, man."
I bit back a groan because I could tell there were other guys in the room. Normally, I wouldn't have to knock myself out playing the tough guy for just Mark, but I did have a rep to keep.
"What happened? Who did this to you?"
"Shepherds," I said finally, but it hurt to draw the breath to say it. Something was stabbing me in the sides. My whole face was throbbing, and I couldn't open my eyes. They were swollen shut. There was a funny taste in my mouth. I guessed it was blood.
"You want to go to the hospital?"
Mark asked. He sounded so worried that I felt sorry for him.
"No," I said. I didn't want to go anywhere. I felt that if I moved, I'd fall apart.
"Can I stay here?"
I figured I was in Terry's house somewhere. I could tell I was lying on a bed.
"Sure, man, you can stay here."
I recognized Terry's voice.
"Brother, you look like you've been through a meat grinder."
"That's what it feels like, too," I said, even though this witticism cost me more stabbing pains in my sides. A reputation is one hell of a thing to have. You've got to kill yourself to keep it.
I'll call the old lady, Mark said. Then we'll go look up the shepherds.
We turned into a big drive-in called Jay's, which was always crowded. It was set up with a stall for each car, and a little deal that had a menu and a button on it. You pushed the button and a voice came out of the deal and said, "Order, please," and you told the speaker what you wanted. In this case, it was 3 hamburgers, 1 steak sandwich, a cherry pineapple 7-Up, and 3 Cokes. And about 10 minutes later, a chick appeared with the food. It was slightly spooky. The place was crawling with kids. It was mainly a sosh hangout. There used to be a drive-in over on our side of town where the hoods went, but the dingo was bombed and had burned down, so we started coming over here. Kids were driving through the parking area looking at the kids who were sitting in their cars. It was the same thing that was going on in the street, only on a smaller scale. They had a cop stationed at the drive-in to prevent trouble. He was on a first-name basis with a lot of the kids there. He was a friendly, good-natured cop who didn't mind getting splattered by a water pistol now and then. I didn't care much for him, though, due to my feelings about cops in general. I began telling Kathy about the time the cops had beaten me up when I was 13. "You shouldn't have been running around drunk in the middle of the night," she said.
"I never thought of it that way," I said.
"Who would?"
came Mark's voice from the back seat. I realized right then that whatever chance Mark and Kathy had ever had of becoming friends was gone. I had already sensed in Kathy the same hostility toward Mark that he had for her. That put me in a really great position.
"Hey, there's Terry Jones. I'm going over to see him," Mark said suddenly.
He gave the cop a quick glance. You weren't supposed to get out of your car at the drive-in. They came up with this rule about a year ago, because all this switching from car to car was causing fights, and what was worse, cars were left empty in the stalls for hours at a time while the owners were running the ribbon in someone else's car. This doesn't make money for the drive-ins.
"Mark doesn't like me much, does he?" Kathy said.
Eminem looked at her, astonished. For the first time, I was sick of her honesty.
"You don't like him either," I said.
Not used to having her honesty turned back on her, Kathy was silent for a minute.
"I guess we're fighting over you. Isn't that funny?"
"A real riot," I said dryly.
I looked across the street, watching some little 12 and 13-year-old teeny boppers make fools of themselves, smoking, trying to act cool, pushing each other, screaming and swearing so loud I could hear them.
"Mark," I said, "I want to talk to you, personal-like." "Sure, buddy. Clear out, you guys."
And because he was Mark, they obeyed him.
"Listen, it hurts like hell to talk, so I'm only going to say it once, and I don't want to argue."
"Sure."
Mark's voice sounded puzzled. I wish I could see him. I knew he wasn't going to dig what I had to say. I could tell he was sitting on the edge of the bed, and I reached for where his hand should have been and caught it.
"I don't want anybody to fight the shepherds."
"What?"
"I don't want to keep this up, this getting even jazz. It's stupid, and I'm sick of it, and it keeps going in circles. I've had it. So if you're planning any get-even mugging, forget it."
I was trying to keep my voice from trembling with pain, but not only did talking hurt my sides, it was killing my face.
"I got you, Brian," Mark said after a silence. "You just take it easy."
He left to call Mom, and I heard him yelling at the rest of the guys to keep the record player down. He stayed all night on the other side of the bed, guarding me. Chapter 9. Mark drove me to the hospital the next day, and I got 15 stitches in my face and had my ribs taped. As luck would have it, I got the same doctor that had sewed up Mark a few months before when he'd been busted with a bottle. He remembered Mark all right. Most people did.
He gave us a disgusted look and said, "Don't you punks ever do anything besides fight?" Mark growled something real cute, but I couldn't get mad. I felt sick, ashamed of myself, even though I hadn't done anything. All I could think about was Mike's getting beat up for driving a black girl home. I kept remembering him saying he didn't hate the guys who did it. Well, I didn't hate the Shepherds either. I tried to explain this to Mark as we drove home. I was so wrapped up in what I was trying to get across to him that I was startled when Mark suddenly burst out, "What are you trying to do to me, Brian?" "What?" I said, confused. Mark had turned white and his voice was shaking, as if he was about to cry. I couldn't believe that. I had never seen Mark cry except from physical pain. "How do you think I feel, man? You won't let me get the Shepherds for you, and here you go giving me this song and dance about how you don't feel bad about getting beat up. You think I don't know they beat you up for something I did? And here you are practically saying you had it coming when it was me who cut Angela's hair. It was me who planned it and me who did it. And it's you who gets beat up for it. Like that damn fool Mike, he feels like he had it coming. Feels guilty for something somebody else did. Man, that is sick. How do you think I felt finding you lying there in the yard? I knew it was the Shepherds. If they had killed you, it would have been my fault. That's eating me up, Brian, and you won't even let me get even for you." He was crying. I just went sick inside. "Mark, it ain't your fault. It's just that I'm sick of fighting. I'm sick of this circle of beating people up and getting beat up. It's stupid." I reached over and gave him an easy punch on the shoulder. "I ain't dead, man. There's nothing to worry about." Mark took a deep breath, and even though his voice was normal, he was gripping the steering wheel so hard that his knuckles were white. "I don't know what's the matter with me. I never worry about what if. I never did until me and Terry came home and found you lying there, smashed up. Then I think, what if, and look what happens to me." He shrugged. "You don't want to get even with the Shepherds. That's your business." We just couldn't get through to each other. He didn't understand why I didn't dig fights anymore. I didn't understand how he could accept everything that came along without question, without wanting to change it. Mom nearly had a fit when she saw me. She was well by then, back at her job. I almost gave her a relapse. I had never been so messed up. A black eye she could take. Stitches in my lip she could take. Smashed ribs she could take. But not all at the same time. I was feeling so lousy that I didn't mind her fussing at me. I pretended it was her who made me go to bed, but I was glad to be there. "You want me to call Kathy?" Mark asked after I'd been put to bed. "Yeah, you mind?" He could get to a payphone and I couldn't. "Sure I mind. Beating up the Shepherds would be easier. But for you, buddy, I'll do it." He gave me his famous Mark grin. "I know she'll be glad to hear from me." I tried to grin back at him, but it was difficult. It's pretty lousy to have the two people you care about most hate each other. I must have dozed off when Mark left. I felt pretty bad. The painkiller shots had worn off and I was running a fever. I don't know how long I was asleep, but when I came to, Kathy was sitting next to the bed. "Hi, Brian," she said, and her voice and her face were so serious that for a dazed second I couldn't figure out if it was Kathy or Eminem. I really felt dizzy and drunk and confused.
"How do you feel?"
she asked, when I couldn't say anything. I just lay there and looked at her stupid-like.
"Oh, all right,"
I said, which made a lot of sense.
"I'm glad you're here."
"Are you?"
she said, and she was crying. There, I had both her and Mark crying within 24 hours. I must be really something.
K- Kathy, I am really glad you're here, I said. I love you.
Okay, she sobbed. Okay.
Then she reached over and held my hand. I took a quivering breath and looked at the ceiling. That hadn't been so hard after all. If I could do that, maybe there were a few other things I could take care of. Well, Kathy said finally, gulping back her tears, your mother says you'll be all right in a couple of days. She sort of half laughed. You just look so awful, Brian.
You look great, I said. She didn't really, I guess, because you never do see a girl who looks good while she's crying, except in the movies. But to me, she looked good.
I'll be fine in a day or two. Then we can go find Eminem. I got a lead on him, I said. My mind was clearing up.
Really?
Like I hoped, this took her mind off me for a little while. And like I hoped, not much.
Yeah. Mark says he's seen him at this hippie commune house.
Kathy looked shocked.
One of those free love places?
I don't think that's the right word for it. I couldn't help grinning. Anyway, he's been staying there. I went over to look for him yesterday, I think. I was still a little confused as to what day it was, or what time.
He wasn't there then, but maybe we can find him. Don't worry, the place wasn't that bad. He could have been in worse places.
All right.
She smiled at me like I knew everything on earth, like whatever I said went, and it really made me feel good.
We'll go look for him when you get better.
She reached over and gave me a quick, light kiss. Because of the stitches in my lip, this hurt. But not much. I took a couple of days sick leave from work. I didn't want to go to work looking like some prize fighter. But as soon as I was able, I took the car and went for a drive by myself. I had been thinking about a lot of things. Kathy, Mark, Eminem, and Charlie. I drove around for 2 hours before I finally made up my mind. I drove out to the cemetery, the cheap cemetery where people who don't have money get buried. I hadn't gone to Charlie's funeral, but I knew where he was buried. I finally found his grave. This was not easy since there wasn't much of a marker. There weren't any big headstones in the whole place. I went and stood in front of his barren grave. No flowers, no nothing. Just the place where what was left of Charlie lay. I said out loud, "Thanks for letting me use your car, Charlie. Thanks for saving my life." This wasn't hard to do. I wished I'd done it when he could have heard me. I don't know, maybe it was a dumb thing to do, but I sure felt better. I picked up Kathy 2 nights later and we went looking for Eminem. Mark had gone out somewhere. He was spending more and more time away from home. Mom was worried about him, I could tell. By now she was also bugged about where he was getting the money he kept bringing home. I still figured he was doing some serious poker playing, but I didn't want to tell Mom that, as she didn't have too high an opinion of poker or gambling in general. Me getting mixed up on that pool hustling business hadn't done much to glorify gambling either.
I just love your mother, Kathy said as we left the house.
She and Mom were getting along pretty good. This was fine with me, as I dug her parents okay too. Right now, Kathy was hacked off at her old man. She blamed him for Eminem's running away. But I liked the guy. Most people do, I said. She knows everybody within 20 miles of here. The mailman brings her all the stray kittens he finds, and the neighborhood grocer gives her free cat food. We were feeling real good driving to the hippie house. We laughed and kidded and horsed around all the way. I figured we had a pretty good chance of coming home with Eminem this time. There were two Volkswagen buses parked in the driveway of the old house.
I knew they belonged to the hippies because of the flowers and slogans painted on them. One read, "War is unhealthy for children and other living things." Really bright.
"This is where he is?" Kathy sighed. "I still can hardly believe that baby is living in a place like this."
I guess big sisters always think of little brothers as babies, no matter how old they are. "Maybe it was good for him," I said. "Maybe being on his own made him grow up a little." I only half believed this. I had always had a good opinion of Eminem's mind, but being smart ain't being mature, as I have often proved. Anyway, we can't be sure he even wants to come home with us.
If he doesn't, Daddy is going to call the cops and have them bring him home. He doesn't want to, but he keeps saying Eminem has had his fling and it's time he came home. This is my only chance to get him home without dragging the police into it.
I didn't know that. Well, let's hope he comes with us. Maybe I could slug him and carry him home. Kathy laughed.
No, let the cops do it if it comes to that. I'd rather have him hate the police than you.
We walked up to the house. There were kids on the porch, just watching the street. I stopped to talk with a biblical-looking guy. "I'm looking for Baby Freak. He around?"
"Yeah, he is."
The guy was staring directly into my eyes. He had friendly, trusting eyes.
"Are you a friend of his?"
"Yeah. A good friend. This is his sister." Kathy gave him the big smile she won me with. The guy smiled back.
"He's upstairs, I think."
Suddenly the guy looked worried.
"He's been floating for a couple of days now."
"Oh, no kidding," I said, keeping my cool, and Kathy followed my example.
"Talk to his travel agent," the hippie said. "He's the cat with the red hair inside."
"Travel agent? What's that?" Kathy whispered as we went in. I didn't want to tell her. Didn't want her to feel the sudden cold waves of fear that I was feeling. So I said, "I don't know." We found who we were looking for. A big, heavy guy with fire-colored hair, beard, and mustache.
"We're looking for Baby Freak," I said.
I was beginning to see why Eminem had acquired this other nickname. Most of the kids there were at least 17 or 18, with a lot of college-age kids. It was a real crowded place, but now I can't remember what everyone was doing. At least some of the kids were smoking grass. You could tell that by the smell. I was hoping the place didn't get raided while we were there. You can get busted just for being at a place where people are smoking pot.
"Yeah," Red said. "Man, that kid is on a bad trip."
Kathy made a funny, yelping little sound.
"Some of these freaks have been dropping acid. Baby wanted to try it, so I sat with him. Bad trip, man, really bad. He's calmed down a little now, but all day today, me and some of these other cats been holding him, keeping him from jumping out the window."
I felt like I was going to throw up. Kathy was as white as a sheet.
"Can we see him?"
she said in a tiny, expressionless voice.
"Sure."
We followed him up the stairs. He led us to the same room Mark and I had gone to the last time we were here. This time no one was there except the blonde chick, who was curled up on the bed asleep, and someone huddled in the corner. To my surprise, Red walked over to the huddle.
"Hey man, there's some people here to see you," he said softly.
"Are they spiders?"
The person didn't raise his head, but the voice was Eminem's.
"No, man," Red laughed gently. "They're squares."
Eminem looked up, and I hardly recognized him. His hair was to his shoulders. He was a lot thinner. He was dirty, and the expression on his face was one I had never seen on him before. Suspicion.
"Eminem? Baby, it's me, Kathy."
Kathy kneeled down in front of him. He was staring at her, not seeing her.
"Square spiders?"
he said, and his face was contorted in fear.
I don't want to see any spiders.
It's me, Kathy, she said again. Your sister. Don't you want to go home?
I went to my stomach,
Eminem said in a high, unnatural voice. He was talking too fast.
I went down into my stomach and all these spiders came out. I never knew there were spiders in my stomach. I was there 10 years, and all that time these spiders kept chewing on me. They were big spiders.
Kathy choked back a sob.
Baby, what have you done to yourself? She said in a whisper.
He seemed to see her.
Kathy? I screamed and screamed and screamed, but nobody came to help me.
He was shaking.
He didn't look right. He looked sick.
I kept trying to get back, but the spiders held me down. Held me down and chewed on me, and the colors went in and out. I listened to the colors, and they were screaming, too. Red and yellow screamed loudest. The spiders were eating them, too.
He kept trying to jump out the window, Red said. All day. We took turns holding him down. What did the guy want, a medal? He had given him the stuff in the first place.
Kathy, I said, we ought to take him to the hospital. She looked at me quickly.
Hospital?
Then she nodded.
Let me call Daddy first.
She looked at Red.
Do you have a phone I can use?
She followed him out of the room.
There was this other color,
Eminem said to me, seriously but half afraid, as if he'd thought I'd turn into a spider any minute.
I don't know its name. It told me, but I forgot. It said I was being paid back for all the carrots I ate. I didn't know. I didn't know about the carrots before. I don't think it was my fault.
He was crying. Tears were pouring down his face. But he hadn't changed his expression. He looked so thin and scared, not a bit like the Eminem I knew.
Do you think I should be paid back for something I didn't know about?
No, I said, clearing my throat. I don't think it was your fault. I put my arm around him and held him. He was shaking real bad. Kathy came back.
Daddy's going to meet us at the hospital. Can you carry him?
Yeah, I said. I picked him up easily. He couldn't have weighed more than 90 pounds.
I'm so tired,
Eminem said.
I was gone so long and I didn't have any sleep.
I carried him down the stairs and out of that house. Nobody made any move to stop me. Nobody seemed to care. Kathy drove us to the hospital. Halfway there, Eminem started suddenly and screamed,
Where am I?
It's okay, kid. You're going to be okay.
Where am I?
He was screaming in terror.
Why don't I know where I am?
I was just sick. I didn't know how Kathy was managing to drive the car. I never felt so bad before. I just held on to Eminem. There wasn't any sense in trying to talk to him. I felt then that he was as much my little brother as Kathy's. That's how bad I felt. Mr. Carlson was waiting for us at the hospital. We drove right up to the emergency entrance, and there he was. I got out and picked Eminem up again, but I didn't have him for long. Mr. Carlson took him and carried him into the hospital, holding him very close, very tight. Eminem was telling him about the spiders.
Chapter 10.
We stayed there at the hospital until the doctor could talk to us. He couldn't tell us much. Physically, Eminem would recover, but mentally...
Will he always be like he is now?
Kathy said. She had been really brave, no crying, no hysterics. Only by the tense, tight way she was ripping the hem of her shirt was she showing how bad she was shook. The doctor replied, I have no way of knowing. He might get better, or he may have lost his mind forever. Either way, I don't believe he'll ever be completely the same. LSD is a powerful drug. People react to it differently. If these kids would only... I tuned him out. I won't listen to sermons. Besides, I was hacked off at that doctor. He shouldn't be saying things like that. He should be saying that Eminem would be fine, that tomorrow morning he'd be the same again. Couldn't he see how what he was saying was tearing Mr. Carlson to pieces? Couldn't he see what it was doing to Kathy? What kind of a doctor was he, anyway? I want to drive you home, I said to Kathy. She shook her head. I don't want to go home. I want to stay here. Kathy, I want you to go home, Mr. Carlson said. You can't do anything here, and I want you to be with your mother when she hears about this. Eminem will be asleep for a few hours. I'm going home in an hour or so. Wait until I get there before you tell your mother. His voice broke. What are we going to tell her? Come on, I said, putting my arm around Kathy, guiding her to the car. Wait a minute, Mr. Carlson said. Brian, I want to tell you how much I appreciate all you've done. I'm really proud of you, son. That was the first time any man had ever called me son without making me mad. I didn't know what to say, so I just nodded to him and gave Kathy a squeeze. In the car, Kathy broke down and cried. I drove to the park and stopped. I held her while she cried. She was almost hysterical. I was crying, too. I couldn't stand seeing her hurt like that. I just couldn't stand it. Don't cry like this, baby, I said. My voice was shaking. Kathy, don't. It won't do any good. Oh, my God, she sobbed. What if he's lost his mind forever? He was such a sweet kid. The sweetest damn kid in the whole world. This was the first time I had ever heard her swear. I tried to think about this fact, to focus on something like that before I lost control and became hysterical, too. He's going to be all right, I said. He'll be just like before. No, he won't. Kathy was trying to stop crying now. He won't ever be the same. This set her off crying again. My shirt front was soaked clear through. She just hung on to me and cried while I patted her head. Finally, she sat up. I love you so much, Brian, she said. I don't know what I'd have done without you. I love you too, baby, I said. This was getting easier to say. And don't worry about what the doctor said. He's one of those hippie haters. Eminem will be okay. I know it. I better go home now, Kathy said. I have to be there when Mama hears. Oh, this is just going to kill her. I let her out at her house, but I didn't go in. I figured this was a family matter, and I wasn't a member of the family yet. I was surprised to see how late it was when I got home. Mom was asleep. I went into my room and laid down without bothering to turn off the light. Mark wasn't home yet. I was tired. I felt empty and drained. Nothing can wear you out like caring about people. I was tired, yet I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep. I closed my eyes, but I kept seeing pictures. All these people were spinning around in my head. Mark and Charlie and Mike and Angela, Kathy and Eminem and Mr. Carlson, and Tim and Curly Shepherd. Life had seemed so simple once. Now it suddenly seemed so complicated. I could remember a time when my only worry had been paying Charlie the $3 I owed him. Things used to be so simple, and now they weren't. I wanted a cigarette bad. I half-heartedly searched my pockets, but I knew I didn't have any. Then I remembered Mark's spare carton and rolled off the bed and reached under his mattress. I felt something strange and pulled it out. It was a long, cylinder-like thing. I unscrewed one end, and all these pills came rolling out. I'm not dumb by any means, I've never used drugs except for a couple of tries with grass, but I knew what they looked like. I looked at this bunch of pills. There were hundreds of them. And it was like a machine in my head went click, 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 and it came up with an answer I didn't want. Mark was selling this stuff. This was way too many pills for anybody to have if he was just taking them himself. And besides, I would have noticed something different about Mark if he'd been taking them. You can't use drugs and not show it. I knew too many kids who were users not to know that. Mark was selling. Mark was a pusher. That was where he was getting his money. That was why he had known about the hippie house. That was why they had known him. That was why he had known where to look for M&M. M&M. Kathy. M&M was in the hospital, and maybe he was messed up for life. And Mark was selling the stuff that made him that way. Maybe this wasn't LSD, but it was a step in that direction. And God only knows what all Mark had been selling. I thought about that blonde, dead-looking chick, and about M&M screaming about spiders, and about Kathy half hysterical with grief. I thought about Mr. Carlson and the bitter doctor, and the whole mess was swirling around in my head, and it felt like it would burst wide open. When I thought about the cause of all this misery, I became very cool. I very calmly called the cops. M&M had lost his mind, and Kathy was hurting, and I did something about it. Then I sat down on a chair in the front room and waited. It seemed only a minute later when Mark came in. "Hey, still up?" he said. Then he stopped. "What's the matter, Brian? You look awful. What is it?" I held out the cylinder. "Oh," Mark said after a pause. "You found them, huh? Well, don't worry, buddy. I don't take them. I have a good enough time like I am." "Just how are you, anyway?" I said. "What?" Mark said, confused. "M&M is in the hospital. Acid trip. They think he may have lost his mind."
"Man, that is awful. That poor kid."
Then he looked at me.
"Brian, don't look like that. I said I don't take them. Don't you believe me?"
"I believe you," I said dully.
"We needed the money, you know. I tried getting a job, but with my police record, nobody'd hire me. And I met this guy on the ribbon. He set me up. I figure I don't have to take it to sell it, so what's the worry?"
"M&M, I began, but I was too tired, too numb to talk.
"Is that what's bugging you? Listen, I didn't sell M&M anything. He got it from somebody else. Look at Brian, they're going to get it from somebody if they want it, so why can't I make some money? I never forced it on anybody. I never tried to talk somebody into using drugs so I could make a buck."
He could have talked all night, and I wouldn't have changed my mind. This was wrong. For the first time in years, I thought about the golden-eyed cowboy who had been Mark's father. Was Mark a throwback? To what? I wondered tiredly why I had never seen it before. Mark had absolutely no concept of what was right and what was wrong. He didn't obey any laws because he couldn't see that there were any. Laws, right and wrong, they didn't matter to Mark because they were just words.
"Brian, what is it?"
Mark cried suddenly.
"Listen, if it bugs you that much, I'll quit. I'll stop selling if you don't like it. Shoot, I never thought it would bother you. I sort of thought you knew about it."
"Don't drag me into this," I thought. "Don't try to make me out to be blind just because you are." Aloud, I said, "I called the cops," and I felt as if I was talking in my sleep. Mark went white.
"What?"
he said softly, disbelievingly.
What did you say?
We could already hear the siren.
Brian, you know what something like this would do to me with my record. Brian, tell me you're lying.
Mark was pleading desperately. I thought maybe he'd run for it, but he didn't. He just sat down in a chair opposite me. He was white, and his eyes were black with a rim of gold around them. He looked the way he had when he'd been clobbered with that bottle.
Brian,
he said quietly, like he was trying hard to understand, like he was totally confused, like he thought maybe I would answer in a foreign language.
Why are you doing this to me, buddy? Brian, just tell me.
I couldn't tell him. I didn't know. The police arrived, and of course Mom woke up. She didn't know what was going on. She could only stand helpless in the kitchen doorway while the police questioned me, rounded up the drugs, and slapped handcuffs on Mark. They advised Mark of his right to remain silent, and he did. He just stood there, quivering, watching me while I told the cops the things that would put him behind bars for years. Then a cop said, "Let's go, kid." And it seemed to dawn on Mark what was happening. He looked quickly from the cops to me and cried,
"My God, Brian, you're not going to let them take me to jail."
Didn't he know I had just put him there? The cop jerked Mark around and shoved him out the door. Suddenly it was deadly quiet. Just the distant siren and Mom's quiet sobbing. I went into the bathroom and threw up. I was sick. Chapter 11. The next morning, I really thought that I had dreamed the whole thing. I thought I had had a nightmare, one I only vaguely remembered. It seemed a long time before it finally got through to me what had happened. Then I was tired and sick, and I wondered why people didn't die from being so mixed up. Why had I turned on Mark? What had I done to him? I tried to remember how shook I had been about Kathy and Eminem, tried to justify what I'd done. But I didn't know now. If I had asked Mark to quit selling pills, he would have. I didn't have to do what I did. Last night it had seemed the only right thing to do. Now Mark was in jail. It would kill him. It would kill him. It would kill him. "Brian, are you going to work?" It was Mom. I was sitting on the edge of the bed, holding my head in my hands. It felt like it was going to burst wide open. "Mom," I said wearily, "what have I done? You don't hate me, do you?" She came in and sat down on Mark's bed. "Brian, you are my only child and my son, and I couldn't hate you. I love you." "You loved Mark, too," I said, only beginning to realize how this mess was going to affect her. Mark, her stray lion, behind bars. "Yes, I loved Mark, and I still do. But you are my son, and you come first. What Mark was doing was wrong. Maybe the juvenile authorities can help him." "You know they can't." I was too worn out to play games. "Let's pretend everything will turn out all right. Let's pretend it's all for the better." "We'll just have to make him understand it was wrong and that what you did was for his own good." I took a good long look at her. She was my mother, and I loved her, but there wasn't any sense in carrying on the conversation. She was tired and hurting, too, but she had hope, and I didn't, and we couldn't talk. "I gotta get ready to go to work," I said. "Brian, don't hate yourself," Mom said, but that was easier said than done. I went through the day mechanically, numb, and hardly knowing what I was doing. I had a rep as a wisecracker and a clown, so this got me a lot of ribbing, but I hardly heard it. I was glad to get home and lie on my bed, smoking one cigarette after another, not thinking, scared to think. I heard someone at the door, but since Mom answered, I didn't pay any attention. "Brian, you have company," Mom finally called. It was Kathy. It occurred to me with a shock that I hadn't thought about her all day long. "Brian, your mother told me what happened. I'm so sorry." She looked tired and nervous, but I couldn't work up any sympathy for her. "Are you?" I said. "Why?"
"Brian," she said, tears jumping to her eyes. "You know I know how you feel."
"Oh," I said. "No, I hadn't realized that." She was quiet, bewildered. I knew I was hurting her, but I couldn't seem to stop myself. It was as if I was outside myself watching while someone named Brian Douglas hurt his girlfriend. I couldn't stop him, and I wasn't much interested in the first place. "How's your brother?" I said. Suddenly it was just some brother of hers in the hospital, not Eminem, not my friend, not somebody I too cared about.
"He seems better, but I don't know, he's still mixed up."
"That makes two of us," I thought sarcastically.
"I thought..."
She swallowed. She was a proud person, and it was hard for her to be humble.
"I thought maybe you'd come up to the hospital today, or call me, or something. Then your mother told me what happened."
"Aren't you glad?" I said. "You never liked Mark. You thought he was beautiful, but you didn't like him. Aren't you glad he's out of the way?"
"Brian, why are you doing this to me?" she said. And suddenly I could hear Mark, as plain as day, saying, "Why are you doing this to me, buddy?"
"I'm sorry," I said. "I can't talk today, Kathy. I'll call you tomorrow."
"Okay,"
she said, still puzzled and hurt, but no longer humble.
"Call me tomorrow."
I wasn't going to call her tomorrow, and she knew it. I wondered impersonally why I didn't love her anymore, but it didn't seem to matter. Mark had a hearing, or a trial, or whatever. I never paid any attention to the formalities. I had to testify. I did. I hadn't seen Mark since they had come to get him. He looked relaxed and amused, tipping back in his chair, glancing over everyone in the courtroom with an easy, almost friendly expression. When I was questioned about my relationship with Mark and answered, "We were like brothers," Mark laughed out loud. When he was questioned, he admitted selling drugs and shrugged. I think it was his attitude that made the judge go hard on him, even though by then judges were beginning to crack down on pushers. Mark was only 16. He had always been able to talk his way out of anything. But this time, he didn't try. When the judge sentenced him to 5 years in the state reformatory, he didn't even change expression. I felt like someone had knocked the breath out of me, and I heard Mom's little cry of protest, but Mark got to his feet and casually strolled out with the officers. He hadn't looked at me once. The next months were a blur. I went to school and went to work and went home and studied. I ended up with straight A's that semester, something that surprised me more than anyone, because I couldn't remember a thing I had studied. I didn't date. Once, at the drugstore, I ran into Eminem. His hair was much shorter than it had been in years, and he was still thin.
"I haven't seen you around in a while," he said.
"Yeah, I've been busy. How you been?"
"Okay," he said, but he looked half scared, and his old expression of complete trust and intent interest was gone entirely. He looked like a little kid. I had forgotten he was just a little kid. "But, I don't know. It can come back, they told me. I could have a flashback. It could come back. And if I ever have any kids, something about chromosomes, they could be messed up. I don't think I'll ever have any."
He was quiet for a minute.
I don't remember things too good anymore. All my grades are shot.
I couldn't help feeling sorry for him. He had been such a bright, sweet kid. I remembered the time, it seemed years ago, when Mark and I had teased him about wanting a large family. Well, that was taken care of.
You used to go with Kathy, didn't you?
He said. The poor kid, he was really confused. He was reading a monster comic. Yeah, for a while.
She liked you better than anybody, he said. I know it. She's dating some guy named Ponyboy Curtis now.
She likes him okay, too.
I couldn't feel any anger, any jealousy, any anything, except a half-hearted hope that they would hit it off together. Any grudge I had ever held against Curtis was gone. So was any feeling I had ever had for Kathy. It seemed impossible that I could once feel so emotional about someone and then suddenly feel nothing.
I'll see you around, I said. But I hoped I wouldn't. M&M made me sad, and I hadn't felt anything for so long. It was slightly scary. I spent that summer working full-time and trying to get to see Mark at the reformatory. But every time I went, they told me that Mark was causing trouble at the reformatory, so he couldn't have visitors. I got promoted from sack boy to clerk. I didn't come to work hungover, and I didn't give the manager any lip. I seemed to have become a mixture of things I had picked up from Charlie, Mark, Kathy, M&M, Mom, and even obscure people like Mike and the blonde hippie chick and the Shepherds. I had learned something from everyone, and I didn't seem to be the same person I had been last year. But like a mixture, I was mixed up. Angela came into the store once, wearing short shorts and a tight blouse. It was funny, but she looked even better with short hair. I guess I'll never see a girl as good-looking as she is. She came through my counter, staring at me coolly, daring me to say something. Poor little chick. I didn't hate her any more than I loved Kathy. I felt sorry for her. "Have you been, Angel?" I said, but not smart-like. I really wanted to know.
"Well enough. I hear you dumped little what's-her-name on Curtis. Well, they deserve each other."
I just shrugged and rang up her stuff. She was going to be bitter all her life, and all that beauty was wasted.
"You know, I'd thought for a long time you were really low, Brian," she was saying, "but what you did to Mark really proved it."
"Angel, you look really good with short hair," I said, and I don't know whether or not it scared her, but she shut up. One night when I was lying on the floor reading a book, Mom came in and sat down.
"Brian, you got even with Mark for Kathy. Then you got even with Kathy for Mark. When are you going to stop getting even with yourself?"
I rolled over and got up and went for a drive. I couldn't talk to Mom, especially when she was telling the truth. Finally, at the end of August, I got to see Mark. He couldn't leave the reformatory, so I had to go in. He had been in so much trouble that the authorities considered my visit a last-ditch effort to straighten him out. If it didn't work, they were going to send him to the state prison. They told me they hoped I could influence him. They didn't say how. I thought we'd have to talk through a wire dealie like you see in prison movies, but instead we were left alone in a room, which I remember as strangely empty.
"Hiya, buddy," Mark greeted me. "Slumming?"
I couldn't speak. I had a real bad pain in my throat. Mark had changed. He had lost a lot of weight, but somehow it had stretched his skin over his bones and slanted his eyes. He hadn't lost his looks, but exchanged them. He looked dirty somehow and hard, things I had never seen in him before. His strangely sinister innocence was gone, and in its place was a more sinister knowledge. He seemed to be pacing, like an impatient, dangerous, caged lion.
"How goes it?" I managed finally.
What's the action like in here?
If I told you how it was in here, he said, you'd be sick.
There was a silence.
Then he continued, I didn't have to see you. I wanted to, though. I had to make sure.
Make sure of what?
Make sure I hated you. I suddenly remembered that time so long ago when Kathy had looked at Mark and for a moment I had hated him. I wondered what it felt like to experience that feeling all your life, to hate the person you loved best. Mark, I began miserably. Mark, I didn't know what I was doing. Can it, buddy?
He glanced around.
Groovy place, ain't it? Seems like home now.
I hear you've been causing trouble.
Yeah, I don't seem to be able to get away with things anymore.
I thought I would break down and cry then, but I didn't.
Listen, I said, you straighten up, and they'll let you out early on probation, or parole, or whatever it is, and you can come home. I'll get you a job at the store.
Like hell you will, Mark said, in the same easy, pleasant voice he had used all along.
I ain't never going back there again. When I get out of here, you ain't never going to see me again.
We were like brothers, I said, desperate. You were my best friend.
He laughed then, and his eyes were the golden, hard, flat eyes of a jungle animal. Like a friend once said to me, that was then, and this is now.
I broke out in a sweat, and was suddenly glad of the walls and the guards and the bars.
I think if he could have, Mark would have killed me.
I haven't tried to see Mark since then. I heard in a roundabout way that he was sent to the state prison. I've just been sort of waiting around for school to start, not much caring whether it does or not. I don't seem to care about anything anymore. It's like I'm worn out with caring about people. I don't even care about Mark. The guy who was my best friend doesn't exist any longer, and I don't want to think about the person who's taken his place. I go over everything that happened last year, trying to figure out what I could have done different, what I would do different if I had the chance, but I don't know. Mostly I wonder, what if? What if I had found out about Mark some other time, when I wasn't half out of my mind with worry about Kathy? What if I hadn't met her in the first place? Would I have still grown away from Mark? What if Eminem had had a good trip instead of a bad one? What if someone else had turned Mark in? Would there still be hope for him? I'm too mixed up to really care. And to think, I used to be sure of things. Me. Once I had all the answers. I wish I was a kid again, when I had all the answers.
The End. You've been listening to That Was Then, This Is Now by S.E. Hinton, narrated by Jeff Woodman. This work is copyrighted 1971 by S.E. Hinton. This recording is copyrighted 1994 by Recorded Books. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends I Am the Cheese by Robert Cormier, also narrated by Jeff Woodman. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So to order another recorded book or for a copy of our latest listing, please call us using the toll-free number found on the back of this book. You can order by phone with any major credit card or by faxing us. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. On our website, you can browse the catalog, hear about the latest releases, place orders, or tune into narrator profiles and author interviews. So visit us there at www.recordedbooks.com. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.